Oscar confirmed a heavy rainstorm was set to drench the basin. By the look of the dark clouds rolling in, he guessed an hour tops.
I saw the weather before we left, Oscar said, but I hoped it would miss us, so I took a chance. Sorry, guys.
This sucks, Casey said to me. Turns out I like camping. It's peaceful here, away from the city and cars and other people, and I wanted more time here with you.
She looked up at me and traced the line of my jaw. Then her eyes flicked toward the others, packing up.
Can we stay? I want to see the rain.
I wrapped my arms around her waist. Thunderstorms out here are pretty gnarly, I said.
You sure you want to?
She nodded.
I'm from San Diego, remember? Where a drizzle that lasts more than 5 minutes is a downpour.
She pressed her body closer to mine, brushed her lips over my mouth.
I want to dance in the real rain.
I stared, all the blood in my brain draining due south.
Stay it is.
Just watch out for mountain lions, Oscar said.
His eyebrows flicked up twice.
You can always tell they're coming by how loud their roar is.
She socked his shoulder.
I'm never going to live that down, am I?
Never.
Theo strode over, pulled us aside.
I don't suppose I can talk you out of this.
She wants to feel the rainfall, I said. Real rain, Casey said. I've never seen it before. I'm a dork, I know.
And I'm a fucking wreck, worried Jonah's immune system can't handle cold rain. We all got a job here.
I swear, Teddy, Casey said. I want him healthy as much as you do.
Jesus, I'm standing right here, guys, I said. Theo looked at me a long time.
Yes, you are.
He gave his head a shake and jabbed a finger at me.
Stay dry.
Scout's honor, I said, holding up a hand. Theo snorted and started away.
You were never a scout.
That's for damn sure, I said. I hauled Casey to me as soon as the cars vanished down the hill. I held her tight, kissed her hard.
You have to wait for the rain,
she breathed against my lips.
Don't want to,
I said, my hands slipping up her shirt. Now that I could touch her, I couldn't keep my hands off of her. Couldn't get enough of her nearness, her body, her kisses.
You have to stay dry, she said, leading me to the tent. We promised Teddy.
In the tent, I divested her of everything she wore, except the old man's button-down. Just as she melted against me, ready to give in, the sky cracked open. A flash of light lit up the world on the other side of the tent. Casey sat up and pulled aside the tent flap, watching the slanted sheets of rain outside.
Oh my God, that's real rain.
She slipped out of the tent and gave a little squeal as the cold water hit her, drenching her instantly.
Oh shit, Theo was right. This is cold as hell.
Come back, I said.
Not yet, she said, letting the water wash over her, her hips swaying slightly. I wish you could come dance with me.
You'll thank me later when you're shivering with cold and I'm dry.
Will you warm me with your body heat?
Damn straight.
She closed her eyes and let the rain fall over her, face to the sky. Her breasts were visible through the wet material of her shirt, her nipples hard, and I could see every contour, every line and curve. The water raced rivulets down her cheeks like tears, but her smile was quiet and private.
I might get lonely out here.
I'm watching you, I said. I like watching you.
I like you watching me, she said.
She lifted her hair off her shoulders, and her breasts rose too. I sucked in a breath and fought the urge to go to her, to put my hands on her.
Wait, just wait, and watch.
Casey let her hands fall and opened her eyes. Her lips were parted, water dripped off her chin, and she slowly ran her tongue along her bottom lip. Her eyes never leaving mine, her hands rose again, this time to her shirt. She unbuttoned the top four buttons, but no more, revealing the perfect valley of smooth skin between her breasts. Her fingertips pulled aside the soaked material and traced over one hard nipple.
Jesus,
I said, my voice hoarse with want. Her hand slipped down low to the edge of the shirt, lifting it. A dull ache settled in my groin, and my mouth went dry as if I were dying of thirst. And there she was, drenched in rainwater.
Come here, I said.
If I do, will you touch me?
She asked, her fingers brushing over the bare flesh between her thighs.
Yes, I said on my knees.
Will you put your mouth on me?
Yes.
Her fingers moved in a slow circle.
Here.
God, yes.
She slowly came toward me, her hands undoing the rest of the buttons. The last one parted as she reached the mouth of the tent, and the shirt dropped from her shoulders to the ground.
You're right, she said, falling into the towel I held out. I'm cold.
I wrapped her up and pulled her in, down to her knees, my mouth finding hers immediately. Her skin was cold, but the heat of her tongue sliding against mine.
Casey, want you.
I kissed her, my hands running the towel over her body, drying her skin and leaving it warm and soft.
You smell like rain,
I said, moving my mouth between her breasts. She moaned softly as I took one nipple, warming it with my tongue, and then nipping and sucking to keep it hard.
Jonah, God, what are you doing to me?
Her fingers twisted in my hair as I moved to the other breast, sucking and grazing my teeth while I dried her back and her hips. Then I hooked an arm around her waist and laid her on the floor of the tent. I dragged the towel over her stomach, down between her thighs, down each leg in turn, and then flung it away. She lay open and spread before me, her lips parted slightly and her eyes glazed with desire. I wanted to strip naked and plunge into her, satisfy the ache. But there was something electric and powerful about my being fully clothed while she lay naked beneath me. And yet, I was hers completely. She owned me. No other woman had ever made me feel like this. Undone, completely unraveled, and yet complete. Casey made me whole, healthy, invincible, and my body was desperate to show her. I knelt over her, lowered my mouth to hers, and our tongues met in a brazen, raw kiss. She reached for my erection, stroked me through the material of my pants, and I groaned at the touch. I wanted to squeeze her hand around me hard, to have that release.
I want this to be good for you, I breathed.
It's already good,
she said, nipping my lower lip. I shook my head. I can do better than good. I lowered my mouth to her ear.
I want to make you come so hard, the entire fucking valley hears you.
I took her wrists and pinned them above her head. Our eyes met and held, hers mirroring the lust in mine. I kissed her again, hard and rough, and she undulated beneath me, her hips straining up to meet mine, pushing against my hands, pinning her. Releasing her wrists, I dragged my tongue and teeth down the smooth skin of her throat, between her breasts, blazing open-mouthed kisses along her stomach. When I reached her thighs, she was whimpering, and I took a moment to breathe her in, draw out the moment a half second more, before bending my head to her and tasting her. She cried out, her hips rising, back arching. I swirled my tongue over her most sensitive flesh, forgetting the raging need coursing through my veins like a wildfire. I delved deeper, harder, my mouth exploring her until she screamed my name.
Yes, I thought. Yes. Louder.
Her body tensed, her back arched. Her hand dropped on my head and pulled me deeper into her, while she came on my tongue, her voice filling up the tent. I could have stayed right there, but then she pushed up on her elbows, breathless and spent.
Jonah,
she gasped.
Come here. Please.
I let my mouth fall from her, leaving her shuddering and wet, then stripped off my shirt and jeans. Her shaking hands helped me roll on a condom.
Christ, had I ever been so hard in my life?
Then I went crawling up her body. She held me around the neck, pulling me to her and kissing me, kissing the taste of her off my lips, while her thighs spread wide for me.
I want you hard, I said.
She nodded mutely, her lips pressed together. They flew apart in a cry as I thrust deep inside her.
Yes,
she hissed.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, my body agreed. Yes to how I fit so perfectly within her heat. Yes to how fucking good she felt around me. Yes to how sweet her mouth tasted. Yes to the push and pull of our bodies toward the edge. And God, yes to her, this woman who'd burst into my life like a wrecking ball, smashing through my routine, bringing me back to life when I had already resigned myself to death. Yes to her chaos, her raw emotion, her desperate need to be touched and held and loved. And yes, more than anything, fuck yes, that it was me she wanted. That she unleashed herself and all her messy imperfection on me.
Yes,
I whispered. To all of it. To us. To her.
Yes.
I felt the slow build in her, heard her cries take on a rhythm, each louder than the last. Her hands clutched my neck, her legs wound around my waist. I thrust deep, hard and slow, caught up in my own rhythm, but holding on for her. She was coming around again, building another orgasm from the first, stoking the fires back up. It took everything I had to wait, but finally she threw her head back and raised her hips to mine like an offering. I gripped her hard and plunged deep, and if we didn't come together, it was damn close.
The rain finally stopped a little after noon, and Casey and I packed up the tent and our belongings. Our eyes met as we worked. The air was thick between us, full of the love we'd made. And my heart was growing full with her. We texted Theo to let him know we were alive and dry, then drove back to Las Vegas. I kept my right hand on her thigh, and she twined her left hand through my hair. We talked and laughed as usual. But in between were thick, warm silences that didn't need to be filled with anything at all. We'd hardly shut the front door of my apartment when she was in my arms again, and I had her up against the wall, kissing her, my hands tearing through her clothes. She still smelled like rain and hot coffee from our lunch stop. I wanted to wash the road off me, off us. We were an us now, and it fueled my lust almost as much as Casey's body. Somehow we made it to the bathroom and showered, hardly able to get clean as we couldn't stop touching each other. We kissed between swipes of a soaked-up washcloth. I tried to take her against the wall, but she slipped through my arms and dropped to her knees. My shoulder blades hit the tiles. I stared blankly at the steamy ceiling as her luscious mouth unraveled what was left of my sanity. Out of the shower, I dried her skin, as I had in the tent, then set her on top of the vanity so I could pull her thighs apart and put my mouth on her. I went down until she was knocking things off the sink, her cries making the medicine cabinet rattle. I wanted to go deeper and harder so she would go louder. I needed her to fill my mouth and ears, wanted as much as she could give me, as many moments as I could grab before they slipped out of my fingers, before I slipped through her fingers.
Ravenous, we ordered in from a Japanese place and managed to stay dressed long enough to eat it.
Now come to bed, she said.
I lay back on the pillows, and she crawled on top of me. She gripped the bed frame above my head her hair falling toward me like pale rain, her breasts swaying as she rode me, coming down hard as I rose up to meet her. And that time, without a doubt, we came together.
Chapter 30. Casey. I woke up wrapped up in him, my head pillowed on his shoulder, my arm thrown across his chest. I stirred and peered up to see he was already awake. He hardly slept much, my Jonah, but he never seemed tired. Even last night, he'd been short of breath after our lovemaking, but he'd recovered quickly. My Jonah, I thought. He's mine now, and I'm his. I traced my finger along his scar. In the morning light, bare to me, I could examine it for the first time. It ran the entire length of his sternum, to just above the faint lines of his six-pack that had been more prominent before he got sick. I'd seen a picture of him in South America, shirtless, possibly at the very same spot where he'd caught the virus. His muscles had been more defined then, but they were still there now. Because he's strong, I thought fiercely. Jonah took my hand, then touched his scar.
Not too pretty, is it?
It's not bad, I said softly.
This is beautiful,
he said, turning my hand over to inspect the tattoo that started at my wrist and went up the inside of my arm, almost to the elbow. It was a guitar, all black ink, made out of F-clefs and musical notes.
Show me the others. Introduce me.
I sat up to show him the blooming rose on my right shoulder, wrapped in thorny vines and buds that trailed down my arm. I got this in Seattle. The sugar skull I had done in Portland, and these little stars. I showed him the smattering of tiny black stars on my middle right finger. We're in San Diego. My second open act of rebellion against my father. The first was playing electric guitar. The second was this impossible-to-hide tattoo. Especially when playing, said electric guitar. Jonah laughed lightly as I snuggled back down against him. What time is it? I asked.
Nearly 7.
He pressed a soft kiss against my temple.
I have to go get some work done. Then tonight is Sunday dinner at my parents' place.
Ah, yes. I remember the first Sunday when Theo distinctly uninvited me to the family dinner. Jonah made a sound that might have been a laugh.
Well, I'm inviting you now. Can you come?
I raised myself up on one elbow. He was so handsome, his dark hair against the white pillowcase. You want me to meet your parents? He nodded and twisted a lock of my hair in his fingers.
I want them to meet you. Moreover, I don't want to be apart from you any longer than necessary.
You've really got this pillow talk down, don't you?
I've been practicing. Can you tell?
Very smooth. He silenced my laughter with kisses. God, even first thing in the morning, he tasted so good, so clean. I broke away with a small sigh, rested my chin on his chest. I'd love to meet your parents. Actually, I take that back. I'm nervous as hell to meet your parents. But I can't go tonight. I had to take another gal's shift at Caesar's to cover the weekend. I'll be slinging free booze in a toga from 1 o'clock until 9.
Next Sunday?
Next Sunday works, I said. It'll give me a week to prepare myself, and a week for Theo to get used to the idea. Still not sure that he likes me. At all. Jonah wore a funny smile.
I think he likes you plenty.
He doesn't show it well. And poor Holly, the way he just dumped her in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, that was shitty, Jonah said. One of the big feats might have grabbed her and taken her for a mate.
Oh, aren't you hilarious? I bent to kiss him again, simply because I could. The kiss deepened and started to turn into something more. Then Jonah's watch alarm went off from the bedside table. Your meds, I said, kissing around his mouth.
Yeah, my meds.
I threw on a long shirt and underwear. He put on sleep pants and a white undershirt. We went to the kitchen together, and he introduced me to his regimen. He gave me the quick rundown of how to make his protein shake. He started swallowing one pill after another while I blended the powders and supplements. Soon, he had to grip the counter and breathe through a wave of nausea.
"Not sure what's worse,"
he said, his head hanging down.
"When it comes, or that I know it's coming."
I poured him a glass of water and rubbed his back. This is real. This is what it means to be with him. A whisper in my mind told me I didn't have the guts to handle anything worse. I swallowed it down, silenced the thought. I wanted to be with him. Not just swept up in an emotional moment under a starry sky, but breathing side by side with him through the nausea. "Do you have other side effects?" I asked. He nodded, taking a long sip of water.
"Insatiable horniness?"
I snorted a laugh. "I noticed. What else?"
"The steroids cause excessive hair growth everywhere. I spend a good 2 hours a day shaving it all off."
I narrowed my eyes at him.
"In fact, I'm glad you're here," he said. "My back has some real hard-to-reach places."
Smartass. I rolled my eyes and kissed the tip of his nose. "Come on, I'm being serious. Or trying to."
"I have nausea. Sometimes my ankles swell, but it doesn't last."
He shrugged.
"I don't have too many other side effects. I'm lucky in that respect."
I nodded while he busied himself with making me coffee. I sat on a stool to drink it, right across from Jonah choking down his protein shake. Deja vu. Minus the burned-out hangover. Jonah met my eyes. His smile stretched out warm, almost proud.
"Look at you here,"
he said softly.
"Just like before. But everything's different."
"Different, better," I said, and climbed halfway across the counter to kiss him.
"Wait,"
he started to say, but my kiss was faster. I grimaced and sat back in my seat.
"I tried to warn you,"
he laughed. I taste grass and twigs, a hint of powdered milk, and smidge of ass." I wiped my mouth on the back of my hand while Jonah laughed. "I'm going to learn to make you something that tastes better than whatever the hell that is."
"Figure that out, and you'll be greatly rewarded."
"In bed?"
"In bed, on the counter, the floor, the couch."
"That's no reward. That's our life now," I said, slipping off my stool to come around and kiss him again. I didn't give a damn about the aftertaste. Whenever the urge to kiss him came over me, I would kiss him. No more living life halfway. We had to go full tilt, just like the card players did. I would hit instead of stay. Always. We dressed, and Jonah drove me back to my place. I jumped out of his truck and came around the driver's side. "Have a great day. Call me later."
"I will,"
he said. I kissed him deeply, my hand slipping to the back of his neck while he cupped my cheek. "I miss you already," I said. He brushed his thumb along my jaw and said softly,
"Talk to you soon, Case."
I watched him drive off, and it was as if some invisible clock began ticking in my head, counting down the seconds while at the same time adding them up to form minutes and eventually the hours until I could see him again. "Moments," I murmured to myself as the Nevada heat beat down on me. "We have thousands of moments." At 11 or so, I was watching a movie on TV while toweling my hair from a shower when someone pounded on the door, hard enough to make it rattle. I muted the TV and grabbed my phone, ready to hit the emergency button. "Who is it?"
"Theo."
"Well, shit." I tossed my phone down and twisted open the locks. Theo filled the doorway, his tatted, muscled arms crossed over his broad chest. I crossed my arms as well. "Next time, bring a battering ram. It's more effective."
"Can I come in or not?"
"Be my guest." He strode past me with purpose, but once he was inside, he seemed unsure. He jammed his hands in the front pockets of his jeans. "Just like Jonah does," I thought. Theo stared at my muted TV where John Cryer was dancing like a precious freak in a record store. "It's pretty in pink," I told Theo. "Have you seen it?" He snorted in the negative. Classic movie. Everyone gets all pissy that Andy ends up with Blaine at the end instead of Ducky. But honestly, if the movie had played out for another year, Blaine would have broken her heart. And Ducky would be right there for her, just like he always was. I'm not saying Blaine is bad for her, not at all. They make each other happy. But Ducky? Ducky's in it for the long haul. I watched a few more muted seconds before realizing Theo was staring at me, as if I were an alien life form. Sorry, I said. I get carried away with 80s movies. They hold the philosophy of life for me. I shut off the TV. So, can I get you something to drink?
No.
He had a pretty good glower going on, but it didn't intimidate me. Even now, when his gaze on me hardened into something close to anger. Okay, then, I said. You want to tell me the purpose of this visit? I'm sure you didn't come here for Pretty in Pink 101.
You and Jonah, he said. You're sleeping together.
I thought we established this back at Grand Basin. Theo began to pace my tiny living room, his hand scrubbing through his hair.
Listen, there's some shit you need to know if you're going to be with him. Shit he won't tell you because he's too damn stubborn.
Like?
His immune system is fucked, okay? Because of the drugs he has to take. If he gets a cold or an infection, it's not like you or I getting sick. It could kill him.
I'm aware, I said. He seems healthy now.
Yeah, now. 4 months ago, he caught a cold from somewhere, and it turned into pneumonia. He was in the hospital for 2 days.
I shivered involuntarily. Oh, okay.
So you have to be careful. If you even think you're coming down with something, you have to stay away from him. You can't kiss him or sleep in the same bed. Promise me.
I nodded. Of course. Jonah's talked to me about it, and I understand. I'll be careful.
And when you have sex?
Theo's face turned red, and he turned his glance to anywhere in the room but on me.
You have to take it easy on the sex.
All right, that sort of falls under the category of none of your business.
Not if it's his goddamn life at stake,
Theo spat.
Everything he does is my business.
I think he can handle his bedroom matters, bossy, I said, trying to lighten the energy between us. He'll know what he's up for. No pun intended. Theo's face went even redder.
He might, or he might not, he said. Like I said, he's a stubborn bastard.
And you're the epitome of grace and tact, Theodore. I kept the snark to myself, though. It seems to me he's doing a really good job of being careful, I said. And I will, too. I will, Theo, I promise. He nodded, his hard stare unrelenting. I held still in it, letting him see me. Despite his rough manner, I liked Theo. He was Jonah's family, and I wanted him to like me, too. Especially now that Jonah and I were together. I promise, I said again. His hands went back in his pockets.
All right.
Is anything else bothering you?
I want to know what your intentions are.
I blinked. My intentions? To make an honest man out of him? I laughed and went to give him a playful shove, but he stepped aside.
You're just going to leave.
I froze, my laughter catching in my throat. No, I'm not, I said softly. I would never.
This is a big fucking deal, Theo said. This is the rest of his life. Do you get that? The rest of his life. If you hurt him.
I leaned my hip on the back of my couch for support. Hurting him is the last thing I want. We stared across the space of my little living room. Slowly, the steely glint in Theo's eyes softened. His hands came out, looked for something to do, and then he crossed his arms over his chest.
Okay. And what happens when it gets bad? What are you going to do?
I'm not thinking like that, I said, and felt my own anger flare. What about hope? What about not being so goddamn sure he doesn't have a chance?
He does have a chance. He does. Theo's arms fell to his sides, and his shoulders slumped a little. His face seemed to tear down the middle, revealing the pain beneath. I remembered Jonah telling me Theo had stood beside him every minute of his illness. He was there when Audrey left. He was sitting next to Jonah when the results of the last biopsy were read. He'd had a front row seat to all the terrible things in Jonah's life. I'd be blind not to see it had made him take responsibility for his brother, the only way he knew how. "You're a good brother to him," I said softly. "You don't need me to tell you, but I will. You are." I moved close to him, rested my hand on his arm. His shoulder went up and down dismissively, but he didn't shy away from my touch. I hesitated. "How are you?" He made a face.
"What?"
"I think maybe you don't get asked that a lot, especially lately. So I'm asking, how are you doing?" He stared down at me, his thick brows furrowed, as if I were speaking a foreign language. Under my hand, his skin raised goose flesh, the fine hairs on his forearm lifting. We both noticed it at the same time, and he jerked away.
"I'm fine," he said, striding toward the door. "It's him we need to take care of."
The door slammed behind him. "Okay," I said to the empty space. "Good talk." Chapter 31. Casey. The following day, a Monday, I arrived at the hot shop promptly at noon, two bags from Skinny Fats in hand. Chicken salads with arugula and capers for myself and Jonah, a breaded buffalo chicken salad for Tanya. I had to juggle the bag with a tray of three smoothies as I hauled the hot shop sliding door open. It screeched and protested, and by some miracle I managed not to spill anything. Tanya and Jonah were working at opposite ends of a blowpipe. Jonah's eyes were narrowed in concentration as he rolled and shaped.
"Air,"
he said. Behind him, Tanya blew into the pipe. The glass swelled.
"Right there,"
Jonah said, his eyes on the piece.
"Perfect."
When it was safe to interrupt, I approached. "Hey, anyone hungry?"
"Starved."
Tanya enveloped me in a hug that smelled like sweat and burnt paper.
"You're spoiling us with these lunchtime visits. Not that I'm complaining."
I hugged her back, thinking, I have five friends here now. I'd never stayed in one place long enough to have so many. I glanced over Tanya's shoulder at Jonah. He smiled to himself as if satisfied and hung the blowpipe from the ceiling. He joined us and kissed me hello.
"Skinny Fats," Tanya said, poking into the bags. "I love this joint."
Her head flicked up.
"Wait, what just happened?"
"Nothing,"
Jonah said, giving me a second kiss.
"It just happened again."
Tanya looked from him to me and back.
"When did this happen?"
I laughed. "Over the weekend."
"Twice on Sunday,"
Jonah added. "Oh my God." I rolled my eyes at him.
"Holy shit."
Tanya hugged me again, then gathered Jonah in.
"I'm so happy for you guys. This is amazing."
"Nah, it's just lunch," Jonah said, rummaging in the bag and coming up with an orange smoothie. He raised an eyebrow at me.
"They were out of mulch?"
"Fresh out, smartass," I teased. His cell rang. He fished it out of his back pocket and looked at the number.
"It's Emmy,"
he said.
"Hey, this is Jonah."
He walked out of the hot shop with its constant hiss of burning furnaces and churning air conditioning to take the call. "Who's Emmy?" I asked Tanya, as we set up lunch on fold-up table and chairs, well away from the fire and trays of loose glass.
"Emmy Takamura,"
Tanya said, forking a bite of her salad.
"She's the curator of the gallery that's displaying Jonah's installation in the Wynn."
My eyes bulged. "His installation's at the Wynn? Isn't that a big-time hotel?"
"Super big-time,"
Tanya said.
"Jonah didn't tell you?"
She sniffed when I shook my head.
"Figures. He's modest to the point of annoying. Anyway, Emmy got wind of him through Carnegie, and after seeing some of his work, she set up to house his project in the Wynn Galleria."
"That's incredible."
What's incredible is you and Jonah. I'm so happy for you guys, I can't stand it.
You seem surprised, I said.
You kidding? She said around a mouthful of greens. I'm shocked. I honestly thought...
She trailed off as she wiped her mouth with a napkin.
You thought what?
Tanya glanced up at me, then around to the door where we could see Jonah pacing and talking. The Jonah I know has always been so serious, intent on his work, you know? Since you've been back in town, he's been different. He smiles more, laughs more. He's always been a smartass, but now he's a kinder, gentler smartass. He still works his butt off, and mine, but it's as if some kind of weight or shadow has been lifted. And now, finding out you two are together... She shook her head. It's not every day he lets in someone into his life. You're the first since I've known him. It's huge. Maybe now he'll rethink letting everyone else back in.
At least for his installation, I said. I want everyone to see it.
Me too. He's so talented, and a truly good guy. Selfless. Maybe too selfless. Trying to protect everyone he cares about. So much that he neglects his own happiness.
The door screeched open, and Jonah returned, his hands fidgety with his cell phone.
Emmy wanted a progress report. I told her 2 more weeks, and we can start moving boxes over to the space.
2 weeks is enough, Tanya said.
But studying the display of his phone, Jonah looked pale.
Something wrong? I asked.
Emmy said she sent out invites for the installation opening,
he said, his voice tight.
Big names. A lot of her connections. She sent one to the Tahuli studio.
Tanya's fingers rose to her lips. And?
Jonah's glance darted between us.
She got a response, saying Dale is really busy in early October, but he'd try his best to attend.
Jonah scrubbed his hand through his hair.
Emmy sent an invite to the studio. I thought maybe they'd send a representative if they sent anyone.
But Dale might come?
Tanya rose to her feet.
Personally?
Holy shit, I said.
Oh my God, holy shit.
Tanya threw arms around Jonah, who looked dazed over her shoulder.
Holy!
She threw him off, seized her fork, and crammed a few bites in her mouth.
Eat. Hurry up. Let's get back to it. There's a bunch of stuff with the still water I want to finish.
And the rays of sunlight,
Jonah said.
And holy shit, Dale Chihuly, in person.
One last bite, and Tanya bustled off to the back room, leaving Jonah and I alone. I got up and slipped my arms around his neck, hugging him tight. I left my hands entwined in his hair and locked eyes with him.
Look at my talented boyfriend.
Boyfriend, huh?
He wrapped his arms around my waist. He glanced away with a short laugh.
I was going to make a joke right there, but I like boyfriend too much.
Dale, freaking Chihuly, I said.
I know. It's surreal. But not for sure. He's busy. He might not make it at all.
Or he might.
I glanced down, ran my hand over Jonah's chest. What can I do to help? Maybe contact some of your old friends from UNLV or Carnegie?
Jonah stiffened.
I don't know. We'll see. I have too much work to do right now.
I'll do it. I pulled him closer. You're being exhibited at the Wynn, for God's sake. It's a big deal. Don't you think it would be awesome to have all your old friends there?
I haven't talked to them in a year, Jonah said. The first thing they hear from me is an invite to a gallery show. They'll think I'm a pretentious asshole.
Not if you let me handle it.
Jonah leaned back, sliding his palms down my arms to take my hands instead.
I can't be distracted with reunions right now, Case. The fact that Dale Chihuly might come is screwing with my brain enough. I appreciate it, but I just have too much to do. Okay?
Okay, I said. Just promise me you'll think about it.
I will. He drew me back into him and kissed me long and hard. "Boyfriend," he murmured. "Do you know what girls do for their boyfriends?"
"Is this a trick question?"
"They take care of them. You've taken care of me since the day we met. Let me have a turn." He sighed with a little smile.
"We'll see."
Chapter 32. Casey. The rest of the week flew by in a blur. Jonah worked hard at the hot shop. I slung cocktails at Caesar's at night and started a half dozen songs during the day, none of which sparked me. The Chihuly invitation made Jonah a nervous wreck. The approaching Sunday dinner with his parents did the same to me. I went shopping at a local thrift store for something plainer than my usual get-ups, something that covered my tattoos and wasn't made from leather or vinyl. I combed racks, consumed with wanting to make a good impression. All I found were echoes of my father, telling me what a disappointment I was. All the old demons followed me into dressing rooms as I tried on garment after garment. I felt like a fraud in everything. I came home with nothing. "They either like me, or they don't," I muttered to myself back at home, as I dressed in my own clothes and applied my usual cat-eye black eyeliner and red lipstick. I sucked on a Diet Coke, wishing it had a slug of rum in it. I tied my hair in a side braid and slipped on a black sleeveless tank dress. It came to mid-thigh, meeting up with my tall black boots that came just over my knee. Jonah arrived at my place wearing jeans and a dark dress shirt rolled at mid-arm, his hair still damp from the shower. "You look amazing," I said, fastening a long necklace with a Celtic-looking silver pendant. "As usual."
"That's my line," he said, his eyes raking me up and down. "And you are fucking beautiful."
My cheeks burned as I smoothed down the billowy folds of the dress. I thought about wearing a normal dress, but it felt wrong. I mean, this is who I am. The tattoos and the hair and the makeup. It's not a rock star act. It's me. Jonah moved to take me in his arms. His hand ran up my tattooed arm.
"I like it," he said. "I like you."
I just want them to like me. I'm afraid I might not be what they're expecting.
"Listen."
He held me tighter.
"My parents expected nobody. The fact that I'm even bringing someone to dinner is in your favor. Trust me, my mother is going to flip over you."
I glanced up at him. "And your dad?" Jonah gently brushed a tendril of hair from my eye.
"He's going to love you."
The Fletchers lived in a modest two-story house in a cute suburban neighborhood of Belvedere. We drove past row after row of houses, all separated by rock lawns and wrought iron fences. Theo's truck was already parked along the curb in front of the Fletcher house. I hadn't seen or spoken to him since his unexpected visit last week. Another knot twisted in my gut as I got out of the car. At 6:15 on a late July evening, the heat had mellowed to a bearable 90 degrees. Las Vegas had been my official home for 3 weeks, and I was already getting used to the weather. I clutched Jonah's arm as he led me up the short walk to the front door.
"Shit, I didn't bring your mom anything," I said. "Can we go back? I saw a flower shop on the way."
The front door opened, and a short, plump lady beamed at us from the threshold. She was in her mid-50s, chin-length brown hair, dressed in slacks, and a short-sleeved blouse.
"I thought I heard voices," she said.
"Hey, Mom," Jonah said.
She hugged him tight and held his face for a moment, her eyes taking him in.
"You look wonderful," she said.
She turned to me.
"Doesn't he look wonderful? And you must be Casey."
She stepped down to embrace me.
"I'm so happy to meet you."
Her embrace smelled like warm bread, and it soothed my nerves.
"I'm happy to meet you too, Mrs. Fletcher," I said, inexplicable tears filling my eyes. I couldn't remember the last time my own mother had hugged me.
"Please, please, call me Beverly." She started back to the house, waving us in after. "Theo's already here, and the lasagna is just about done. Do you like lasagna, Casey?"
"I love it," I said, slipping my hand into Jonah's.
Did I forget to mention she's a hugger? He whispered to me.
I nodded. I love her. Beverly led us through the living room. It was simply furnished, a little cluttered, with Jonah's beautiful glass pieces displayed on side tables, bookshelves, and windowsills. A gallery of photos on one wall showed Theo's artwork. He'd been a talent since he was a toddler, and Theo and Jonah at every stage of life. Little League, school portraits, prom pictures, mugging side by side from preschool to adolescence, one smiling bright, the other making a face or scowling. You've been adorable your whole life, I said, pausing to examine a middle school photo, Jonah's teeth obscured by braces.
Let's move along. Nothing to see here, he said, gently dragging me to the kitchen.
Theo sat at the island, its counter brown speckled granite that matched the backsplash. The cabinets were a warm, scuffed white. Like the living room, the kitchen was simple and cluttered. The heart of the house, filled with warm, comforting smells and good food. The last of my nervousness fell away, and I went to wrap my arms around Theo from behind and kiss his cheek. Good to see you, Teddy. He smelled good. A clean, sharp cologne over the softer smell of his soap. He tolerated my hug and kiss, and hunched further over his beer bottle. Beverly shut the oven door and shot me a knowing smile. Theodore is named after my husband's great-grandfather, who went by Teddy. But Theo refuses to answer to it. Right, honey? Theo's jaw clenched.
Not that anyone fucking listens. Language,
said a voice at the kitchen door. Mr. Fletcher joined us at the island. He was a tall, slender man, with dark hair graying on the sides. He stuck his hand out to me as if I were a potential business partner.
Henry Fletcher, he said, giving a firm shake. A pleasure, young lady.
Jonah shot me an amused look, but I nodded politely. Thank you, sir. It's nice to meet you.
No sir is here. You can call me Henry or Henry.
He winked.
Whichever you prefer.
Something to drink, dear? Beverly asked, opening the fridge. I have beer, soda, wine. I picked up O'Doul's for you, Jonah. I'll have one of those, too, I said. Beverly handed the green bottles to us. The night is so lovely. I thought we'd eat in the backyard. Do you mind, Casey? We can stay indoors if you prefer. A nervous lilt wove through her words, and her hands never stopped moving, fussing, arranging, doing. Outdoors is perfect, I said. Wonderful, she said. I'll turn on the lanterns Jonah made for his first year at Carnegie. You've never seen anything so beautiful in your life.
They really are something,
Henry said. I believe it, I said. Jonah's work is astonishing. Jonah waved his hand.
Enough.
Astonishing, yes, Beverly said, her eyes resting on her son.
And an ample payoff of the tuition investment,
Henry added.
Dad?
Jonah said quietly. Theo's muscled shoulders hunched and he took a slow, deliberate pull from his beer bottle.
I'm merely stating a fact,
Henry continued.
The arts isn't an easy sector to make a living in. One has to direct one's talents appropriately. And not squander them working at a tattoo parlor,
Theo said. Like a stick wedged into a gear, the levity of the room came to a screeching halt. Henry and Theo exchanged long, hard glances. Who wants to help me set the table? Beverly asked, her voice taking on a shrill edge. She reached into a cabinet and lifted down a stack of plates.
I got it.
Theo took them from her hands and shouldered out the door toward the patio. I'll help too, I said, taking napkins and silverware and following. Mrs. Fletcher beamed, and the night was rolling again. Wonderful. The outdoor dining table sat beneath a pergola, clusters of glass globes hanging down like elegant fruit. Here we ate lasagna, bread, and a green salad. Solid, home-cooked food. The kind of meal my mother made when I was a kid. But dinner time at my house was a sullen, cold event where I was always talking too loud, even when I wasn't speaking. My father's stony, oppressive presence turned the good food to dust in my mouth. The Fletcher's table was full of laughter, non-stop talking and bickering. A bit of silent tension lingered between Theo and Henry, but Beverly diffused it with stories of her son's youth that had me choking on my bread. "I swear," she said, pouring herself a glass of Cabernet. Her third, I noticed. "Lake Tahoe has an enormous beach, plenty of sand for everyone, millions of grains, and these two fought over one bucketful." I nudged Jonah on my right. "You fought over sand at the beach?"
"So speaketh an only child," Jonah said. "Sand appropriation is critical to 4- and 6-year-olds.
He glanced at Theo with a sly smile.
"So are imaginary butterflies."
Theo jabbed his fork in Jonah's direction.
"Don't even."
Jonah ignored him.
"Once, Theo got pissed at me because he caught an imaginary butterfly, and I let it get away."
Theo reached across the table to poke his brother with the fork.
"Shut up."
"I love this story," Beverly sighed.
"That makes one of us," Theo said.
Jonah brushed off the fork and rested his elbows on the table, regarding his brother with affection.
"Theo cupped his hands over thin air and told me he'd caught a butterfly. I asked to see it, but he was afraid it would fly off."
"When was this?" I asked.
"Last week," Jonah said.
"Try 20 years ago, asshole,"
Theo muttered.
"Language, please,"
Henry said. Jonah's voice grew low, the teasing ebbing out of it.
"Finally, he said I could hold it. He put his hands in mine, all the while describing the butterfly's wings. Bright blue, rimmed in black. How it opened and closed them, as if it were breathing. He even told me how its legs looked like black hairs against my skin. Remember, Theo?"
I glanced at the tough, built, tattooed man sitting across from me, glaring daggers at his brother. Yet I could easily see the sweet little boy he'd been, describing this non-existent but precious butterfly.
"But I wasn't careful enough," Jonah said. "I opened my hands too much, and Theo said the butterfly flew away. He cried and cried."
"Are you fucking done?"
Theo said.
"Language,"
Henry murmured. All the teasing was gone from Jonah's face now.
"I never apologized for letting it go," he said. "I tried to give him another one. A monarch in orange and black, but it was the blue butterfly he wanted. And it was gone forever. I'm sorry about that, bro."
Theo sat back in his chair.
"Are you serious?"
Jonah shrugged.
"Just clearing the air."
The brothers stared silently, a silence full of love despite Theo's hard tone. Full of that one memory, and thousands like it. "So," Beverly clapped her hands together. "Who has good news?" She turned to me. "I believe everyone has good news from the previous week, even if only a little." "Jonah has amazing news." I put my hand over his and gave it a squeeze. "Right?" His mother leaned in. "What's that, dear?" Jonah toyed with his fork, his gaze flickering to Theo and then down to his plate.
"So, Emmy Takamura, the gallery curator, she says Dale Chihuly is going to try to attend the opening of my installation."
Beverly's hands flew to her throat. "Really? Honey, that's wonderful news."
"Remarkable," Henry said.
"Well done, son."
Jonah sat back in his chair.
"Well, hold on. He hasn't said he's going to be there, only that he'd try. Still, the fact he'd even consider it,"
Henry said.
"It means he's taken note of your work."
"I guess," Jonah said.
"It's fucking awesome,"
Theo said.
"He'd better show up. Be an idiot not to."
For once, his language went unadmonished. Another loaded look passed between the brothers, and I found myself smiling, as if I'd become a translator of their unspoken exchanges.
"Theo has good news," Jonah said. "One of his clients is going to be photographed for Inked magazine. He'll be credited on one of the designs."
The barest smile flickered over Theo's lips. "That's wonderful," Beverly said.
"Body pollution is what it is,"
Henry said.
Jonah set his empty bottle down hard.
Jesus, Dad.
I leaned back in my chair, fighting the urge to cover the tattoos on my bare arms.
What?
Henry said.
No one is a bigger fan of my son's talents. Theo is an exceptional artist. But it boggles my mind to think of spending one's life drawing on other people.
Because it's art,
Theo said.
It's permanent art people carry with them. And when I get my own place, I'll be a legit business owner.
You'll be taking a risk,
Henry replied.
Can we not do this right now?
Jonah said. As the Fletcher men glowered at each other, I thought Henry was nowhere near as intimidating as my father. But his disapproval of Theo left the same bad taste in my mouth. Not every guy who can draw can be a tattoo artist, I said in the silence. It's a special skill, being able to take a person's vision and turn it into a reality. And you're absolutely right, it's a risk. The artist has to ink it perfect the first time, because there's no second time. Jonah can recycle the glass and start over. Theo gets one shot. No do-overs. I felt all eyes on me, but I only looked at Theo, who stared back in that way he had, like he couldn't believe I was real. Obviously, I'm biased, I said, running a hand along my arm. But I don't see it as body pollution. It's expression. Every one of my tattoos means something, and getting the tattoo is as much a part of it as having one, because of the trust and collaboration with the artist. The silence deepened. I shrugged and took a sip from my fake beer. Just my 2 cents. Henry shifted in his seat.
I suppose that's one way of looking at it.
Everyone seemed to exhale at once. Jonah's hand found mine under the table, and he gave it a squeeze. Beverly stood up, gathering plates. Who wants dessert? Chapter 33. Casey. It was nearly 11 when we said our goodbyes. Beverly pulled me in for a long hug.
I'm so happy to have met you. Come back next Sunday. Every Sunday, can you?
I nodded, melting in her embrace. I'd like that. She released me and turned to Jonah.
I'll see you next week, honey.
Of course,
he said. He kissed her cheek and she patted his. She held still then, her gaze unapologetically memorizing every detail of his face. I looked away, my eyes stinging. I felt a shift in my soul as I was exposed to this moment between a mother and her son. For the whole drive home to my place, I couldn't think of anything to say. Words wouldn't capture it. They might even ruin it.
What you said to Theo was amazing,
Jonah said. It was the truth.
But it was new. Dad is so hard on T, and he's grown deaf to hearing me defend him all the time. He needed a fresh perspective.
I was worried I'd crossed a line.
Not at all.
I heard faint echoes of my dad and your dad. Don't get me wrong, yours is nothing like mine. It's just, I know how Theo feels.
Never good enough,
to say the least. Does he really want to open his own shop?
He does. But unless he gets a big chunk of cash for a down payment, he needs a co-signer on a loan. That's a huge point of contention between him and Dad. My parents had to take out a second mortgage to help cover my hospital bills because my insurance only went so far.
Oh.
Theo would never complain about that, of course. It's just, our parents have always been 100% supportive of me, and less so with him. The balance is horribly skewed.
Jonah pulled into the lot of my apartment and parked. It must be so hard for him, I said. Jonah brushed his knuckles over my cheek.
I think you won him over a little tonight. And my parents loved you. I knew they would.
It was a good night, I said. I unbuckled my seatbelt and climbed into his lap, straddling him. Let's end it with a bang.
Literally or figuratively?
Jonah murmured, his hand sliding up my thighs as our mouths met. Both. Our kisses quickly became more heated, even as a passing car lit up the interior of the truck and the steering wheel dug into my lower back.
This isn't as easy as it looks in the movies, Jonah said, breathing hard. Change of venue?
I nodded. Upstairs, I said, then added in a husky southern drawl, take me to bed or lose me forever.
Jonah's brow furrowed.
Body heat?
Top Gun.
So close.
In my bedroom, Jonah's humor fled and he caught fire. I'd never felt so wanted by a man in my life. His kisses turned bruising. His hand stripped me of my clothing. His eyes were dilated, the deep brown of them almost black. I tore off his shirt, fumbled at the zipper on his jeans.
Leave these,
he said, as he fingered the thigh-high tights I wore under my boots.
And the necklace.
A white-hot thrill skimmed through me at his rough-voiced need. His breath came hard as he stared at me, naked but for the black nylon along my legs and the curved silver horn between my breasts.
Casey.
I let out a little sigh, my legs weakening. We grabbed for each other again, and he backed me up against the bedroom wall, his tongue, teeth, and lips mauling my mouth. I could feel him between my thighs, hard and ready. I fumbled in the nightstand next to me and blindly fished out a condom. He gripped my hips, barely holding back while I tore the condom wrapper open and rolled it down over him. Then his hand slipped under me, lifted me, and I wrapped my stocking-clad legs around his waist as he groaned into my mouth. My arms went around his neck, my nails digging into his skin, and my teeth biting at the slope of muscle between his neck and shoulder. Already, the sensation of him inside me was so intense, so dizzying and hot. I was delirious. I've never had it like this, I swear, I said into his skin, clutching him, clinging to him.
Me neither,
he said, finding my mouth again.
All I want is this. You.
His body moved against mine fast and hard. He filled me up, the heavy pressure stoking a sweet ache of pleasure into something that roared and consumed. I held him to me as tightly as I could, taking his thrusts deep while the glow of need in my belly burned brighter than molten glass. My shoulder blades ground against the wall at the force of him. His name whispered out of my mouth, and then screamed from my throat as he drove into me again and again, until I came to the edge and plummeted over. My body shuddered and clenched around him. He let out his own masculine sounds of climax, deep in his chest, and God, if that wasn't the hottest sound I'd ever heard in my life. Jonah's grinding hips slowed. He released my legs, letting my feet find the floor. But his body still held mine to the wall. His hands closed around my wrists. Within the hard grip, his mouth turned gentle, soothing the burn of his stubble and the bite of his earlier kisses from my skin. Carnal need and tender care. Desired and cherished. Loved. Jonah makes love to me, I thought, kissing him back. My fingers soft on his skin where they'd scratched him. No matter how hard or rough we are, he's still making love to me. You make me feel so good, Jonah, I whispered. Better than good. Like I can start all over again.
Casey.
He held my face in his hands, his dark eyes intent on me.
You make me feel alive.
He kissed me again, slow and soft, while I burned with hope. Sure, there weren't thousands of moments left to us, but millions. Millions.
Chapter 34. Casey. Have you ever been to the beach? I asked Jonah. Not a lakeshore, but a real ocean. We lay around in bed on a Tuesday night. Typically our date night, but we'd opted to stay in and fool around.
Sure. Why?
I miss it. Growing up, the beach was such a part of my daily life.
I used to ditch school in the mornings, and my best friend and I would go to one of the coffee houses along the boardwalk in Pacific Beach, or a breakfast place that had surfboards hanging from the walls. We'd hang out at the beach until after lunch, then go back to school so we wouldn't miss last attendance. Sometimes it got us out of a trip to the assistant principal's office. Most times it didn't, but it was always worth it. Jonah brushed his hand over my cheek.
You're pretty fair for a beach lover.
Big hats and SPF 1000, I said. And I preferred swimming or body surfing in that big ocean.
Big and endless.
If you think the stars were spectacular at Great Basin, wait until you see a moonrise over the Pacific. He nuzzled my ear.
Sounds like you're planning a trip.
I really want to take you to San Diego. Walk on the beach and hang out at all the cool spots I used to love.
And see your parents?
I shuddered. No, God no. It would just be awkward and uncomfortable.
I can handle awkward and uncomfortable. If you want to see them, you should.
I don't. I want to be with you, at the places I used to love best. I lifted my head to look at him. Can you? 2 days. Flights are pretty cheap, and I still have some rapid confession money.
You should save it. Don't spend it on me.
I want to spend it on us. But if you can't spare the time from the hot shop, I understand.
I can.
I caressed his face. Really?
If it's important to you, I can.
I let out a little cry of excitement and kissed him. Let's go next Monday and Tuesday, so we don't take time from your parents. Of course, Theo will have a cow. Jonah laughed.
He might. But how beautifully happy you look right now is more than worth it.
Theo's flight safety demonstration lasted half an hour. From what to do if the cabin pressure in the airplane dropped, to making sure we brought all of Jonah's meds and stored them properly so they wouldn't get confiscated by the TSA. And, of course, where the nearest hospital was to our hotel. But I never took Theo's concern for Jonah for granted. I patted his cheek and told him I'd take good care of his brother. I booked us into a place with the most San Diego name ever, the Surfer Beach Hotel on Pacific Drive. Its proximity to the beach made it a little pricey for my budget, but I wanted us to be able to walk along the ocean at night, in the morning, or any time the urge struck us. The price was worth it. At the airport rent-a-car, Jonah led me to a black Ford Mustang convertible.
You didn't think this entire trip was on you, did you?
He asked, holding the door open.
I've got savings. Between the two of us, we can make these 2 days pretty damn awesome.
We put the top down, cranked the music up, and Jonah gunned the engine with a whoop of laughter. Singing loud, we cruised along a post-morning commute stretch of freeway and arrived at the hotel around 10. We had the entire day ahead of us. What do you want to do first? I asked, tying on the top of my black bikini.
What do you want to do second?
He replied, throwing me down on the bed. Yes, I whispered, as he trailed kisses down my neck, his hands working the knot on the back of my bathing suit. This first. It was after 11 when we made it out to the beach. We set up near the shore, and I kicked off my flip-flops to bury my feet in the hot, soft sand. You smell that? I asked, inhaling deeply.
Seaweed?
Jonah asked, eyeing a clump that had washed ashore and was buzzing with sandflies. The ocean, I said. His arm slid around me from behind.
I want to smell it in your hair after we swim, he murmured, and on the bedsheets later.
I turned and kissed him, my hand sliding over his chest and arms. His skin was hot, slippery with sunscreen. I tugged him to the water. The cold of the ocean bit down hard, taking my breath before it relaxed into a soft coolness. I dove under the foam of a wave, just as I used to do when I was a kid. The cold water on my face and the pull of the ocean were just as I'd remembered, and the nostalgia was so strong, I had to get my bearings for a minute. But there was Jonah. My here and now, and the moment felt as big as the ocean. Jonah flopped backward into a cresting wave and disappeared beneath the surface. He came up out of the water, the sun glistening in the beads of water along his chest. Water arced off his head as he whipped the hair out of his eyes. I bit my lip as a shiver went up my thighs. Jonah swam up and kissed me. God, he tasted so good. Like himself, clean and warm, but with the tang of salt water mixing in. He groaned into my mouth, then broke away with a gasp. Holy shit, he said. I could feel his erection straining against his swim shorts. You taste like salted caramel. He kissed me again, and I pressed my hips to his. We're going to have to live here. Oh yeah, I said, wringing my arms around his neck. Literally, right here in the water. I'll be arrested if I come out. I laughed and walked backward, deeper into the ocean, shielding the front of his body with mine. I fell back, taking him with me, and we kissed above the surface and below it, before coming to rest in the water, neither of us speaking. Jonah held me as I floated on my back, my head in the curve of his shoulder, and I had the fleeting wish that we could live here. Not in San Diego, but in this day, these moments, over and over again, forever. We had dinner at the Chart House, a beachfront restaurant that was a splurge, but life was short and money was for spending today. Afterward, we walked along the surf, hand in hand, carrying our shoes. The full moon hovered over the horizon. Its light spilled over the black ocean in a cone of molten silver. This was a good idea, Jonah said. He stopped walking and cast his gaze out over the waves. Every decision I've made since I met you has been good. Taking you home that first night, eating at that diner, letting you stay for a few days, asking you to come back when you left.
I was a little persistent on some counts, I said.
Thank God you were.
He turned to look at me, and his moon-filled eyes were fierce.
My family and friends ask me what I want. What I want to do or see besides make glass. And I've only told them what I don't want. I don't want to travel to some far-flung place, just so I can say I went. I don't want to climb a mountain or jump out of an airplane. A little bit of exhilaration and then back on the ground again. Those manufactured moments aren't what I want.
He brushed his hand over my hair, pulling me close.
This is what I want. You and me in a place like this, outside of time. Going for a walk along the beach, eating or swimming or making love when we feel like it.
I heard his breath catch.